Welcome back to the Blue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Flat. Check us out on Twitter at PK Blue Guys. Check us out on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Almighty Baller Network, and netsdaily.com. Brian.
Mike, take it from the top. It was flat. Flat as could be.
Brian, welcome back.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Special pod today. This is our, I guess, our not really our trade deadline pod, but this is the pre-trade deadline pod. We have on Yahoo's Bobby Marks, former Nets assistant GM, Brian.
Yeah, yeah.
Another big get for us. We're on a freaking roll, baby.
You really don't mind tooting your own horn, do you?
I feel like after... So President Trump has showed us the way. You have to talk about yourself. No one's going to be talking about you if you're not talking about yourself.
That's so true.
So that's my new motto.
And I definitely won't talk about you for you.
Yeah, so that's the pod today. So we'll have him on a little bit later today. Before that, we'll talk a little Nets action.
Wow. I'm looking at the you've got the game recap up. This is my notes. The Bucks game last night, and he's got that. So there's like a side story that they were following with that tennis pro who, and she brought a date.
Who I want to say whose name is Eugenie Bouchard, but it's probably not it.
Anyways, the dude was pretty impressive, to be honest with you. Could you imagine how nervous you'd be under that kind of scrutiny?
I think something can happen here. So if you don't know the story,
I'm very impressed with his composure.
You may know the story a little bit better than me, but like she made, I don't know, some kind of Twitter bet with someone that essentially like if Atlanta, she said Atlanta was going to win the Super Bowl and someone said, no, the Patriots are. And she said, okay, I'll go on a date with you. And she ended up going on a date with this guy to the Bucks Nets game.
Yeah.
Which was last night.
No, he was keeping it. He was keeping it, although I'll say it was maybe a little too cool for anything real to materialize. It was kind of a little bit too much of a cool breeze, if you catch my drift.
Oh, why do you say that?
I don't know. You know, you have to play that card very carefully. You have to give some. You can't just be cool breezing it the whole way through,
Mike.
I think
you got to be cool breeze for this type of circumstance because you don't want to be eager fan because that is like you're just going straight down the hill at that point. Once you show 1 second of eager fan, happy to be here.
Yeah,
not feeling good. You can't show eagerness.
Yeah. Well, the good news was they went to a decent game. You know, that could have gotten real awkward if they go to like a 40-point blowout.
And I had this feeling about this. And so, okay, so we're watching the game. You know, I'm on our Twitter. I'm seeing everyone, you know, be happy about the Nets. Certainly can be happy.
And that just grinds your gear. You can't have that.
No, okay. This is what I want to say. People are happy about this team, and as am I. But we're also happy about them because they do play offense. And offense is it's a positive thing. You're creating something.
Yeah.
And again, with this team, we can be happy because Spencer Dinwiddie was amazing.
Yeah.
And he was creating offense. But the problem is, and the problem has been, that this team cannot play any defense. And every freaking timeout, let's say the Nets would score, bring it within two, get it close, timeout, everyone's feeling good. And then immediately the Bucks would come down and make a big play. And it was easy for them. It was too easy. And it's like...
Let me ask you something.
Yeah, please do.
Do you think... First of all, let me just ask you this. This has been something I've been meaning to talk to you about for a while.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's important. Oh, God.
Your body... No,
not in front of... my body
you,
is telling me...
Okay, so we have to... Mike, I'm trying to get the point out.
Rondae
Ellis Jefferson, does he pass the eye test at the four spot?
Yes.
Yeah, I do
That's
think so
future.
As well. That's pretty great.
That's his future. I mean, if you're going to do top three positive developments of the year, that's number two.
Yeah.
On the top three
That's
list.
A big one. And so here's my one qualm with it, though, is it means the pairing of Caris LeVert and him... It's a stagger. They don't see as much time on the floor together, which you can tell they just really feed off of each other. I mean, not that it was like getting as tons of wins or anything, but it was at least, we're looking through, we're just trying to sift through the positive stuff. That was a nice like relationship. That was
the LeVert Rondae Hollis.
Not that it was just, you know, it was a relationship with a utilitarian purpose.
Yeah,
you know, not just because I like, you know, peace and love and harmony, which I do. But
and I do think it's interesting that. So the Atkinson did this like all rookies lineup like for two games or something, and they're still not like just all like we're just all young dudes. They're just all being thrown out there, and that's going to be the lineup for the whole game. The Rondae Hollis Jefferson thing is he's been playing the best basketball of his career.
Yeah,
he So I was thinking about you and I have been talking about trying to get a Nets player on the pod.
Mm-hmm.
We have this email that we've drafted. It's beautifully drafted.
We've really scrutinized it, sculpted it perfectly.
Yeah. You really did some nice touches as your publisher.
Mike, where would I be with a guy building a skeleton out like you did? Hell of a skeleton.
Thank you. And so we wrote this beautiful email, and we're going to send it to Nets PR. So if you're listening, we're going to send you an email.
We have our unofficial producer guy on his handle's DM. What is his name?
Oh, I thought you meant net income.
Oh, well, no. I mean,
he's executive producer of this podcast.
But the dude on Twitter is gunning for Kenyon Martin so hard.
Okay, so that's another thing we want. And I think that can happen because he's part of that as TM, our unofficial official associate producer, says he's part of that big three Ice Cube NBA veterans like league. There's a real shot that we can get Kenyon Martin, right? Because I think the pitch email is perfect. Like, you're part of this new league. We are Kenyon's fan base. We are the direct voice of Kenyon's number one Nets podcast on the iTunes charts.
And the number one team of Kenyon Martin, despite everything.
So we can get him. But we want to get a Nets player on. And looping back here, I thought about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson when I was thinking about if we were to interview him, if we could get him on the pod, the thing I would say to him is, Rondae, if you want to make money in the league, all I would think about is rebounding. And that's exactly what he's doing. He's only thinking about that.
This is another one of those guys I'd want to talk very little about basketball with. Maybe we just pull out some instruments, see what a jam sesh comes to bear, you know.
What instrument are you pulling out?
I know he plays around the piano a little bit. I can do guitar and drums, Mike, so I'm a bit of a polymath. What do you play? Triangle?
I was marching cymbals.
Marching cymbals.
I was marching cymbals. And triangle. And woodblock. Those were my three. And timpani because I knew how to read notes. That was the four instruments that I was really good at.
Nice. I see you as also kind of a trombone guy. I don't know why.
No, don't you dare ever call me a trombone guy again. Yep.
We don't have to do that, though. We could also talk about basketball. I guess we have to at some point.
I really do mean that. So I want to be positive about this team, and we have been positive. I'm just saying, last night, the Bucks game was a perfect example of it feels closer than it is, but the fact is they gave up 129 to the Bucks without Jabari Parker, and the reason why is that they just can't. They are unable to play defense. They don't have the dudes to play defense. So like Rondae's fun at the four, but he really can't play defensive four. Like in terms of like against, he can't switch on to Antetokounmpo and like make him miss a shot.
Yeah, you got to be very crafty. You got to do a lot of interesting stuff. You got to play those passing lanes incredibly hard. So it's like an incomplete picture, but it's obviously like the best application of that guy. Furthermore, I think we were talking about this a little bit the other day. There is an interesting kind of conundrum here with Kenny Atkinson and his. So I think I do a little internet research, customer testing, see what people are thinking out there in the web. Right. And there's a small contingency of people that are starting to turn on Kenny Atkinson. You feel it. He's been, you know, half a year or whatever, you know, three quarters of a season starting to take place. And what so we talked a little bit about the issues with Kenny Atkinson. So first of all, he has a knack for certain things that he's not able to exploit quite yet. I think that's the general that's the general thought process that we had. So I was watching specifically, there was this one play at the end of I think it was the third quarter or something, and this is maybe 2 weeks ago, and he drew up a play where Justin Hamilton was going to get the ball on the strong side low post and then shoot a like weird kind of baby left hook. But what it's actually supposed to do is he draws in Trevor Booker's defender. He's kind of lingering close to the baseline. And as soon as that guy cuts over to double Justin Hamilton, Trevor goes backdoor and goes for an alley-oop pass. The problem is Justin Hamilton reams it off the front of the rim, and it looks like a missed hook shot versus the lob pass that it's actually a lob pass disguised as a hook shot that looked more like a hook shot because it hit the rim and not the guy's hands. So really clever play, smart use of the players, because Justin Hamilton, everyone kind of knows his strength and weaknesses. In this case, you would want to double him in that position. Makes sense on paper. The actual application of it didn't materialize, but it's a very smart line of thinking. So he's obviously playing this up-tempo game, this modern version of basketball, and I find that there's a little bit of dissonance. Maybe he's just totally well-rounded and he can play both sides of the ball. I don't know. I'm not saying it's one or the other necessarily.
Right.
They're not mutually exclusive. But there is a version of his skill set as a coach that could be a half court play, a you know, run a whole play for the first, you know, 15 seconds of the clock, and then and I think that could also be a version of success for him.
And I think, and we've seen it multiple times throughout the year, of him play designing, or whoever's designing his plays out of, you know, inbounds plays are all beautiful. The one thing I would like to assess more as we go on is Atkinson making this team play this style of basketball where they shoot a ton of threes, they play with a really big pace, because he believes that is the right way to play.
Right.
And he will never play any other way. Like, basically, is he coaching his style? Is he a coach that is going to adapt to his talent? Because it's tough to say, is he a coach that can adapt to his talent? Because he doesn't have talent to adapt
to. Yeah, exactly. Like, there's no... I don't see a way that you would play otherwise than what they're doing. Like, I don't fundamentally have an issue with that at this point.
I think it's the right way to play. It's going to attract people to come to your team. I don't think playing a way that, like, Charlotte plays under Clifford... They don't really play an appealing style of basketball. It is effective, but it's not appealing. I think when you're this bad, I don't hate that you're not playing to your talent, but I do think there's an element of, couldn't they be doing things a little bit, like we talked about defensively. It was early in the year when this was happening, but when they were like, they were blitzing screens and they were going crazy and making Brook Lopez like guard outside the three-point line, which doesn't make any sense for Brook's ability. I would love to talk to Kenny Atkinson and see, is he just coaching this way because he feels like that's the right way to play and he doesn't believe there's any other way to play? Or is it, you know what, we just have no talent. Let's just try to play this way. Let's just see what happens.
Yeah, and outside of my like being a little butthurt about the not pairing Karras and Rondé thing, I don't have an issue with his rotation. I mean, how could you at this point? Like, what are you going to get upset that, you know, Bojan Bogdanovic is taking Harris's minutes? Or what? I mean,
and I was complaining about Dinwiddie getting minutes, and then, of course, he is just a huge... awesome game. And there was a moment where I was very proud of Spencer because he was hot. And then there was a play where it was like the last 2 minutes of the game. He has the ball. He's looking for a shot. He kind of drives to the foul line and he doesn't have a shot. And guys who are normally that hot, who aren't used to being that hot, would just still shoot it, not give a crap about it.
Are back.
Exactly. He passed the ball.
Mm.
Spencer Dinwiddie made the right play even though he was hot.
Do you have a little bit of Dinsanity? Is that what you have? I stole that from a guy on Twitter. I stole that. Sorry,
no, I don't.
Guy on Twitter. Stealing your flow.
I don't have Dinsanity.
That came in a little hot, didn't it?
And it was interesting that Spencer Dinwiddie, I don't know if there's a relationship here, but there's all this talk of in the Nets sphere of Yogi Ferrell and how, you know, he got signed by the Mavs. He had a really good week. That's a guy that was on the Nets, and now he's a 2-year contract with the Mavericks. Dinwiddie's the guy that basically took his spot. Does Dinwiddie feel that pressure? Did he feel that pressure? You know what was interesting was that I thought Nets fans would be more mad about the Yogi Ferrell thing. Everything I've gotten from our listeners at BK Glue Guys been tweeting at us, they don't seem to care that much.
Yeah, this is a phenomenon we're used to. This is the what is basketball now that I'm on the Nets phenomenon. They just, you know, people underperform on this team. It's a curse. You know, it's that somebody put a hex on this team. No, it's not that bad. But
no,
there's been very few cases of somebody that gets traded to the Nets that overperforms. I don't think I can think of one off the top of my head.
I'm racking my brain, and it's...
You can either perform at the level you're expected, like a Vince Carter.
Right.
Or way below it. That's it. There's almost...
This is so hard. There's got to be some guy who just, like, lit it up.
Yeah.
For a short period of time.
I mean, like Jason Kidd, it was,
but that doesn't
always
count,
good,
right?
Yeah.
There's like a certain, like, I guess I was about to say there's a certain level of goodness that is untarnishable, but Darren Williams should have been that level of goodness.
What?
And he wasn't.
Yeah, I fell from it. I can't think of like a middling guy that just blew up.
I do think under Atkinson and Marks, we're going to see that, and we're going to see it happen. I mean, actually, like Booker, I think Booker deserves... He's
definitely okay.
He's one of the weirder cases with this team is that he's gone to a bench player and he's better.
And his stroke is looking like suddenly more competent, and everything about his game seems to be developing like overnight. It's kind of strange.
It's so funny. We're going to talk to Bobby Marks soon, and it's like, I think there's like six guys on the Nets, counting Brook, but there's six guys on the Nets that if I'm a contender, I would want just as a like a bit piece. Like if I can get Kilpatrick for cheap for second round pick. He's easy 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Booker's of huge value. Second unit, like, guy that can totally help you out.
I went back and watched Booker clips from his Utah days, and you can even tell, like, his hook shot, he doesn't follow through on anything. Like, he doesn't, it's just, it looks like one of those, like, you know, offensively stunted right. people. And now it's like, I don't have any, like, qualms about him taking a crazy runner in the lane or whatever.
And not in handling the ball. And, you know, again, it's weird because he's moved to the bench. And I think Anthony Puccio from Nets Daily, shout out, wrote about this, is that Booker's been a better player. As like, his statistically has been a better player. He's actually got an increased minutes, I think, on the bench. So, you know, we'll see. Do you have a live read to read?
Oh, yeah. Here, hang on. Let me get it. So I'll just launch right into it. So, Mike, you're familiar with Audible.com, I hope.
Of course.
Because today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. You get a free audiobook, download, and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/almighty. That's where you can get over 180,000 titles to choose from on your phone. That's an iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player, whatever you like. So for you listeners of the Glue Guys, Audible is offering a free audiobook download. Mike, what are you going to get? What's come on, there's got to be something.
The Old Testament. You heard,
the Old Testament.
Yeah.
I actually, weirdly, this is, I bought an illustrated version of it by R. Crumb, not on Audible, but in life.
An illustrated Audible book.
That's the next frontier. That's Metabooks.
Hashtag business idea, hashtag marketing.
Yeah, but I'm still making my way through 50 Shades.
I saw Hamilton like a while ago, and then I got drunk immediately after, and I bought like five American history books on Kindle, and then haven't read a single one of them. So
should have done that on Audible.
Let me go see a play, get drunk, and then I'll get something.
Giant
on Audible.
Mistake. You had a great idea that we should put together a reading list for Audible for basketball books. So yeah. I don't know if anyone thinks that's a good idea. Tweet us if anyone wants to participate in that. We'll set up a whole little thing.
Then we bring the authors on. I think.
Yeah, oh my God, Mike.
That's the goal.
Oh my God, Levert alert that one.
Well, that's not hooked on.
That's not hooked on.
All right, we got we got Bobby Marks coming up. So.
Okay. Yeah. So thank you to Audible, and that's www.audibletrial.com/almighty. And it really helps out the pod, and it helps out yourself. It helps out your brain. But yeah, on to Bobby Marks, Mike.
All right, now joining us is Bobby Marks, former assistant GM for the Nets and now NBA front office insider for The Vertical. Bobby, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. How are you?
Good. I mean, we were just talking about the Bucks game a little bit last night. And, you know, sort of through all that, I mean, we want to get into Nets stuff later on. But, you know, we saw Spencer did what he did well, and we all saw Brook. And sort of like the first question for everyone, especially with trade deadline coming up, is Brook's value. We had Ian Eagle on 2 weeks ago, and you know he was saying the Nets are expecting 2 twos. What do you think would be Brook's actual value? Not that what the Nets would want, but what's the accurate sense of value?
Well, I think it's hard with Brook, where his salary is right now. You know, it's in the low 20s. He's got another year left, which is a positive. It's not an expiring contract. You know, we all got spoiled, I guess, a couple years ago when Mozgov got traded from, you know, Denver to Cleveland, and they were able to get, you know, 2 first-round picks from him. And I guess that was the standard back then. But things are a little bit different now, you know, as far as from a center standpoint. If Brook was a wing, if he was 6'7 or 6'8 and was playing like he is right now and has been healthy in the past few years, then I certainly think you can warrant, you know, as far as from multiple picks here. You know, you guys have seen the last, you know, week here where 2017 picks have been moved. But they're picks in the 20s, and teams are reluctant to give up, you know, one of those, you know, either it's a late lottery pick or a pick in the teens right now. So, and I think from Brooklyn's standpoint, I think with Sean and the group there, I think they have to figure out as far as are they looking to, you know, take back an expiring contract for Brook? Are you looking to take back a player with years? What your goal is, you know, because as you guys saw, cap space is nice to have, but you know, when you're stuck with it it's a little bit of a challenge there.
And so we just saw, obviously, Ibaka was the first big move of the season. If you were to just sort of dump everyone out into free agency in terms of just straight value, who would have more value overall? Would Brook Lopez or Serge Ibaka? Not in terms of contract, but I'm just saying, because we now that we know the price for Ibaka is a quality young player and a late first round pick, is Brook as valuable as Serge or not as much or more, would you say?
No, I think he is. And I think the big thing with Brook is that he's shown that he can be, that he's healthy. He's been healthy the last, three years here, 3 or 4 years since he had that surgery in 2013. And he's still in the prime of his career. He's added a different dimension this year with, you know, the ability to hit, to hit three pointers. There's still a role for him, certainly, in the league here. A lot of the time when you're doing deals and making trades, it's about timing. You look at the Orlando Toronto trade from this past week. You have a team in Orlando who had given up a bunch last draft with Oladipo and Ilyasova and the rights to Sabonis, and you took back an expiring contract in Ibaka. Then you went out and spent a lot of money in free agency hoping that this team could be in a playoff, and then you factor that in. I think they were 20 and 35 or 20 and 36 when they made a trade, and they found the right partner in a Toronto team that had been struggling, 4-10 in their last 14 games. Team that, you know, went from the 2 seed and they were now their 5 seed. So it was certainly the perfect match there.
So specifically to your earlier point about like Brook's salary being, still under the old CBA's price range, and Ibaka being under the new one, and going to be offered, like, you know, they traded for him under the understanding that he would have to be pitched a new contract soon. Do you think, just broadly, like, since there is kind of a divide there between players on old contracts, new contracts, that and also teams having a little bit more cap space to play around with, is this generally a buyer's market or a seller's market for what we can expect in this trade deadline frenzy?
I think you're going to see a buyer's market for those teams that are in that 6-9 range, yeah, who are hanging on for a playoff spot or are a game or two out. You saw it with Denver this past weekend, you know, acquiring Mason, you know, Plumlee, and giving up a first round pick as well as Nurkic. I think you've got to pay attention to the Detroits of the world. I don't see a team like Charlotte or even Milwaukee doing anything. I think they might just ride it out, those two teams. What does the Bulls do? What does New Orleans, teams in that respect? Sacramento is another team. I don't think Portland will do anything, but I think that's where you're looking at. And if you're a Western Conference team, if you are, let's say, Clippers and Utah and Oklahoma City, I don't know if there's a deal that gets you anywhere closer to where Golden State right now is. In the East, it's a little bit different. Now you've got the Kevin Love injury out 6 weeks, which basically takes you to probably April or right when the playoffs are about to start. You've got Boston, who's got basically all different kinds of assets. You've got Washington, who's played well. Do those teams smell a little bit of blood in the water to try to either get to two if you're Washington, or try to lap them? So what will one of those two teams do? Will they risk up? You know, Washington last year, you saw when they did the Markieff Morris trade, they traded a first at the time and didn't make the playoffs. You know, could the same trend for Ernie Grunfeld continue in the next week here?
So the biggest name that is actually out there would be Carmelo Anthony, and I feel like we've hit a little bit of a lull of the idea that Carmelo is going to be traded, just because it seems like Boston doesn't want him. The Clippers don't want to trade any of their three guys for him, so then basically they're left with Austin Rivers, Jamal Crawford, and I guess other stuff, small stuff for Carmelo. Your gut reaction, Carmelo stays with the Knicks most likely going into the after trade deadline, or do you think he will get moved?
Well, it's funny. Every time I hear his name, I always get cold sweats. You know, and I think back to 2010 and, yeah. and 2011, and I'll jump to that in a minute. But I'll give you a quick story here. So, you know, we spent, as you guys know, you Nets fans, you know, we spent so long chasing him for, I think it started in September, and then it ended, you know, a day or two before the deadline in 2011. Then I think it was that Monday that they agreed upon in. That trade to New York, and about a year later, I was at Chris Humphrey's wedding when he married Kim Kardashian.
Mm-hmm. Wow!
And Carmelo was standing in front of me, and I said to him, "You know, you made my life a living hell for 7 months and everything." And he got a kick out of it. But I think jumping back to him, his number is so hard. You know, it's twofold. The no trade clause, where you basically dictate where you want to go. So the pool of teams right now is so small. We can basically eliminate Cleveland because, you know, Kevin Love's not going to be traded. And I don't think New York's going to want a package of J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert, guys they've traded before, and a pick in 2023. When you look at the Clippers, it's basically the cards are right in front of you as far as what they can do. And they're challenged because of the hard cap. So you're looking at a Austin Rivers, a Jamal Crawford, a Wes Johnson, that combination. And, you know, they've got multiple picks going out, so they couldn't do anything till I think the earliest 2022. Boston has the assets. I mean, if they wanted to do a deal, I'm sure they'd be able to do something. But I think they're looking at this summer where they could have, you know, $30 million in room, possibly the number one pick in the draft, an opportunity maybe to renegotiate that Isaiah Thomas contract. So – I think you're a little bit lukewarm there. So I see him in a Knick uniform when we get to 301 on Thursday. And I think when you get into the offseason, the pool I would think would expand a little bit here from maybe three teams to five teams or six teams. And when a player has a no trade clause, you know, it's good to kind of get away from things when their season ends. You know, either figure out what you want to do with your family life, talk with your agent, and maybe a team like, let's say Denver, who goes on a run and upsets a team in a playoffs, you know, maybe that's an opportunity for them to get in the mix here. Maybe a team that we hadn't thought about all of a sudden comes in here.
Well, and from Melo's perspective, it benefits him to, I mean, he's not going to waive his trade clause unless if it is to, let's say, Clippers or maybe Boston or somewhere else. But, you know, this Phil situation isn't the sturdiest situation in the world. You wouldn't think Dolan would make a move to get rid of Phil, but it could be the other way around where Phil just says, this isn't exactly where I want to be, and maybe I want to basically just retire and not be a part of this situation anymore. So maybe, like, basically just may, for both parties, may just say, let's just wait until the summer to decide something, to actually make something happen.
Yeah, I think that's where you're looking at. I think let them get through the next. You know, I don't see them as a play, and I didn't see them as a playoff team when they made all these moves. I always thought their bench was a big question mark. You know, concerns over Rose, Noah. I thought they were a borderline team, maybe at best, trying to fight in here. And now we've kind of, you know, I guess they're, what are they, four or five out of eight right now, and I don't see a run in them. They have got to go out west here soon. So I think you kind of just take a deep breath when you get into the off season with what happens with management, what happens with Carmelo, and who exactly is going to be your point guard in the future here.
I'm just thinking about this wedding you went to. My God, I can't. Who was at your table, Bobby?
No, it's a good icebreaker if you're going out to dinner with another couple here. You know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, my gosh. So I guess. Coming back around to you, we have some people that were emailing us asking you questions. We got our man Ben Winters was asking about, so who else on the Nets has value to a contender? He's thinking in the, like, Bojan Bogdanović, Randy Foy range. Does anyone else jump off the page as someone who's, like, imminently tradable to a, like, and actually makes a difference on one of, the, like, the four really competitive teams?
Well, Bojan's interesting, and, you know, he's one of those older rookies, or not a rookie anymore, but, you know, a third-year player. He's got an expiring, but, you know, I those players who are restricted free agents, you kind of put an asterisk next because a team, whoever acquires, has the right the right to match anything. So he certainly does have appeal. All the young kids have appeal from what the people I've talked to, and I wouldn't do anything with them, but the Caris LeVerts of the world, the Rondae Hollis-Jeffersons, the Isaiah Whitehead, Sean Kilpatrick, all guys who make not a lot of money but have done a lot of good things. They've got a lot of value around the league and everything. But if I'm management, I'm not doing anything, unless a team's basically going to back the Brinks truck here. I'm not doing anything with those guys.
Yeah.
The Foys and Scholas, it will be interesting. The both of guys are on expiring contracts. Could a playoff team, possibly with room acquire them? Possibly. Yeah. So I think it's a little bit of a wait and see approach with them.
Draft wise, and this is just like a question more about the protocols of an assistant or a GM. Like how soon do you start charting these players? Like first, specifically like Caris LeVert or anyone like you would draft. Like how early on is their name going to hit the dry erase board as someone to be watching? Like in any of these situations.
Well, you do it when you have your meetings in October with your personnel department. Caris is a little bit different because he had been out for such a long time, and then he finally came back. So, and it wasn't like he was, he's a Chris McCull and he's down in a D League playing. There really wasn't an open book on Caris, and he had gone, at Michigan he had been injured a bunch there too. So a little bit of a limited body of work, especially his senior year. But when you're meeting with your group, if it's your personnel department or your scouts and your general manager, usually your director of scouting is kind of putting together a list of players as far as who to watch. When you get going in the preseason and you get going in November when you get go out and watch games, and then from there on, you're meeting and you're having conference calls, you're meeting in person, you're kind of going line by line through each roster here. But Caris kind of came onto the market, real late here, just based on that foot injury. But he's been really good. I like him a lot. I love his length. He's a competitor. He's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder there.
So I did want to ask you more about general questions. So I think it's most fans know the team's general manager, and that's, or however we want to phrase that title, and they basically don't know anyone else in personnel department. How many people are involved with personnel and scouting with an NBA team? I mean, these are billion. I think Forbes came out something like half the teams in the league are worth $1 billion. But I think most people probably be just surprised about how many people are actually involved with personnel and scouting. When you were at the Nets, what was the rough number of guys who were with scouting and personnel department overall?
Well, we had a smaller group. I mean, I look at where teams are now. I'm 2 years removed from being in Brooklyn, and I look at, and I've spent some time with some other teams here, just kind of seeing how they put together, their personnel department. And every team has a little bit of a different structure. In Brooklyn, when Billy was when he was the GM, there was two of us as far as assistant GMs, for myself and Frank Zarin. Frank was more personnel and I was more, administrative from a salary cap standpoint. Mm-hmm. Then you have your analytics guys, you've got your scouts, you've got pro scouts, you've got college scouts. Now you're starting to see a lot of teams go to more of an emphasis on from a pro personnel, real high emphasis. You've seen Detroit really beef up their staff in the past. We mentioned the analytics, your sports medicine group, your training staff, your off-court player development. Now with everyone having a D League team too, that's added a different layer there. So there are some teams that can go 25, 30 deep, including your coaches. There's more that maybe can even go, 35 plus people.
Another thing I've always wondered about. So we had a trade rumor come out recently. It was involving the Pelicans and Brook Lopez. And, almost immediately anyone that watches the NBA know that it came from the Pelican side. It was something like the 2018 first round pick and then like some rotational guards and then I think Oshik's contract was in it.
Yeah, I think it was like Etuan Moore and Tyreke Evans and like
Tyreke,
yeah, something
yeah.
like that.
Tyreke Evans, Frazier, I think, is the guy's. Yeah. Anyways, yeah. Anyway, so what's the motivation for a team, a personnel department? Let's say that the Pelicans put that out. What would be their motivation for telling a reporter, "Hey, we're talking about this"? What's the thinking behind leaking information?
Well, you know, I guess you'd want to maybe start some type of bidding war for that and let it be known that the player is available out there and basically this is what the deal on the table is. I think when you look at it, and it's interesting, I think we can probably even talk about the Philly situation down there with Okafor, okay?
Right.
And here's a player, and I had never seen this happen before, what happened the last week where they basically held him out of games because he was being talked about in discussion for a trade. It's a lot different than you have a framework of an agreement in place and or you have a handshake agreement and you hold that player out that night. Where here, it basically lingered for about a week here, and you head into the All-Star break without a deal. And who knows if they'll be able to get one by the deadline here. So I think there, you know, that almost started to create a bidding war. I don't know if there was actually any bidders to it.
A bidding war without bidders, right?
That's another story and everything. But I think when teams put information out there, it usually comes from one. It's never really from the teams. A lot of it's secondhand information. It could come from an agent or another team that you've maybe team A who's not even involved, but in the course of a conversation with, let's say, Sean Marks, it might have come up, and that team, even though they have no business of what the deal is going on, maybe would have told somebody else, and it gets to a writer, and that's how it sometimes gets out.
So just getting back to the emails, this is from a guy named Jose, a.k.a. GNYR. So he wants to know, now that there's a chance, the Nets...
He asked me a lot of questions on Twitter, I think.
Yeah, very active. Yeah. He's one of our biggest... He asks us a lot of things at all hours of the day.
Shout out to your boy. So at least in terms of taking on salary to reach the salary floor. So we know that Festus Ezeli's name has been out there, and I think everyone's kind of like, that's kind of the ideal situation for all parties involved. Do you think there are any other names or teams that are kind of in this shedding payroll state of mind that they'd be willing to do similar deals for even just second round picks, things like that?
Well, it's interesting because there are not that many tax teams this year. I mean, you basically have Cleveland, who is not going to shed salary. They're looking to possibly add. You've got the Clips. I don't see them doing anything because they're pretty top heavy. They got about five or six minimums. Portland's about $450,000, under the tax and stuff. So if it's going to be a team that's shedding money, it's going to be a team that's involved in a trade that needs to create a roster spot. So I think that's where you're going to possibly have to take advantage of a team. Ezeli is a good name because. He's got a million guaranteed next year. You would hit the floor. You'd hit the floor. You would become real close to the floor this year and basically owe him, maybe a couple million dollars and stuff. So I think that's where you're going to see it. I don't think it's going to be with the teams that have our tax teams looking to cut money. But I think when we get to Thursday, it's going to be teams that need to move a player to create a roster spot there.
I have a Boston Celtics fan friend that believes that teams won't do deals with Danny Ainge because he's gotten so many good deals.
They would love to think that. That's exactly right.
No.
Is that real?
Don't talk to me about Boston.
But is that real? Like, is that like Masai and with the Knicks? Like,
yeah. But it's funny with Masai, just because I've been writing about all these different teams, besides that Ibaka trade, Masai had never made a trade deadline deal. And I think the only one in Toronto he had made was the Nando DiCola for Austin Day trade 3 or 4 years ago. I know he did the Melo deal in when he was in New York and in Denver with the Knicks and everything. And yeah, I mean, Danny's made some great trades. I mean, we can talk about the Rondo one for Crowder and a first. we can tell, you know, of course, the net one.
What's in the net one?
The Marcus Thornton in a pick for Isaiah Thomas. You know, it's funny that day when I wrote up Phoenix, it's like you go through, you know, it's funny, you go through these teams and your GMs and you just like, wow, like some of the trades, you know, I mean, Ryan McDonough, as great as a drafter he did, you know, had a bad day that day. Mm-hmm. You know, when you traded that Laker pick to Philly, and you traded, you know, Dragic, I know you got two first, and you traded Isaiah Thomas, you know, all within a matter of hours there. Mm-hmm. And everything. So I don't know, but going back to Danny Ainge, teams will do a deal with him, but I think there's a little more caution on people's sides here.
And I think so kind of going back to this Isaiah Thomas thing, I find it so interesting, especially now with Carmelo. I think a year ago, people were saying the Cavs could get Carmelo Anthony and just give up Kevin Love, because at that time, Kevin Love was not really loved by the Cavs fans. People would have said that's a fine deal. Some people. Isaiah Thomas, no one really thought that was a bad deal at the time, because I think Knight was involved and Knight was thought of more highly or had more of a future. I think that's where the Nets have to succeed, is the Nets have to get basically a guy who is not really thought of super highly right now, but that does have some talent that you hope, you know, some team just doesn't really love that much, and then he comes over to Brooklyn and just has the opportunity. I mean, they have to sort – they're not going to get the next Isaiah Thomas, but that's the avenue that they have to go on. They have to get the guy who has the bad perception, I guess, at the moment, and then move on.
Well, it's singles and doubles. You know, that's the mindset you have to go. And I think, you know, with Sean and the group, when you get into the next week here, and I think the summer kind of left a little bit of a bad taste in, you know, some people's mouth, you know, how you went after Crabbe and Tyler Johnson, you know, when restricted free agency and the deck was a little bit stacked, and then you strike out there. So I think if you're Brooklyn, I think you can be a little more take advantage of players that have multiple years left on their contracts, that maybe a team is looking to get to shed money to try to be a player, knowing that maybe that's your free agent for this summer, and you don't have to play a waiting game here. And I, you know, everyone gets in trouble when you're trying to, you know, you're trying to hit and knock it out of the park and you're trying to hit home run deals, but I mean, Danny's made a bunch of singles here.
Yeah.
I mean, at the time, we're singles. We like Rondo for Crowder. You know, I mean, yeah, Crowder, I liked him out of Marquette, and he was a nice second-round pick. And Isaiah was the last pick in the draft and had a nice career, nice run in Sacramento, and then was in Phoenix. And you know, the Brandon Knight trade at the time, nobody criticized it, because you guys remember that Milwaukee team that we had our hands full with them. I think we went to like double or triple overtime multiple times, and that was when Jason's first year there.
I was at that game when I think it was Brandon Knight that smoked the layup in like double overtime.
I mean, he was – him and Middleton were – I mean, they were a bitch, man, you know? And they were – I mean, what was Milwaukee's record when they traded him? They were criticized big time, because how could you trade your point guard? And then they went on a free fall. But, I mean, he had been playing great, and then he gets to Phoenix and – you've got him and Bledsoe together. Does it fit? Does it not fit? Now he's coming off the bench. He's not as productive. He's on a big contract here and everything. But I think when you get into either the deadline or you get into the offseason, that you've got to look for these under the radar type players here.
Yeah. So speaking of singles and doubles, Sean Marks obviously targeting the restricted free agent market quite a bit. The singles and doubles center of the universe. So I think there's a change in the CBA specifically regarding restricted free agent process. Is that correct, or is that not right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things. I mean, you can start signing players to an offer sheet. Starting the first of the the first day of the moratorium. But the actual offer sheet doesn't kick in until, you know, the day the moratorium is lifted. So you're basically in a holding pattern there. The window now is reduced from 3 days to 2 days. So now it's a little bit harder. But, you know, restricted free agency is so hard.
Yeah.
You guys have seen players do not change hands, or teams don't allow players to change hands. And even the ones the numbers are high, you just look at them as an asset. you know, you sign them to a high number, and then eventually they're tradable. You know, you look at Miles Plumlee in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. He was traded. You look at Tobias Harris a couple years ago in Orlando. He was traded. Enos Kanter in Utah. He was traded. You know, teams sign these guys as an asset where you're either looking for picks or players. And I think that's what probably with, you know, I don't know about Miami with Tyler Johnson because I know they like him down there. But I think if you look at Alan Crabb, that number, and that's basically right now an untradeable contract because you put that trade kicker in there. Mm-hmm. So basically his contract's like $20 million a year, not, you know, $18 million.
What's a trade kicker?
He's got a trade kicker in his contract too. So I think it's 15% of the actual value of what's remaining.
Wow.
So you take that and you spread it over the years that on his deal. So that's a next to an impossible want to move here and everything. So, but a restricted free agency is tough. I think when you look at the new CBA that's coming in, and then besides the tweak to these rules, a lot of it's going to be about retention. Mm-hmm. You know, retaining your own players, and it certainly gives teams an advantage.
I'll let you just one last thing, and this could be a one-word answer. And we'll let you get out of here on this. Brook Lopez gets traded, yes or no?
I'm going to say yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm gonna say yes, and only because Brooks' name has been in 40 different trades since I've known him. And I was teasing that if Sean Marks had the Philly philosophy that Brook probably wouldn't be playing in a game all year, or if we had that philosophy when we were in Brooklyn, because he had been rumored in so many different trades here and everything. But I think there'll be a team that steps up to the plate come Thursday. You know, gives Sean an offer that, you know, maybe isn't a home run, but as we talked about earlier, it might be a double, and it maybe makes sense for, you know, for the organization here.
Let me tell you, you just made Mike's whole year, day, I don't know.
I've been talking about Brook trade rumors since we started this podcast, I think, 4 years ago.
I've got no inside information, yeah. I'm not giving you guys a
new. No, we're going to run that headline, don't worry.
All right, well, thank you, Bobby, for joining us. That's, you can find him on The Vertical. He's got so much great stuff about, especially the inside numbers, why those numbers matter in terms of salary cap. It's the best stuff out there. So really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bobby. Take care.
Yep, take care.
All right, so that was Bobby Marks' interview. Brian,
oh,
success.
Lovely.
We got the Brook Lopez yes out of him.
Mike,
I wish
the listeners could see the S eating grin on this guy's face right now.
It felt like I won the trade. Yeah. I did it.
That was a personal victory for you.
Because I was expecting, so when you throw that question out there, you're like yeah. I don't know what you're expecting, but
He played ball. Great.
So thank you, Bobby, again. He was very generous with his time.
Yeah.
And we really appreciate it. Next time we have him on, we will dig into the Chris Humphreys wedding. That should be the pod.
That was the one he balked on. He was like, yeah, I don't want to talk about who's at the table.
We'll do that.
Hold his feet.
Maybe
to the
do
frame
an oral there. History and put it on audible.com.
That's genius.
All right. Find us at BK Glue Guys.
Yes.
Stitcher, SoundCloud, Almighty Baller Network,
mm-hmm.
and Nets Daily.
You can also check out the other, if you like other teams somehow, you could listen to other podcasts on Almighty Baller Podcast Network.
Very nice, Brian.
I like to pay it forward. Well, good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.